भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, The Rainy Season and Autumn. Text number 13. Word meanings, Jala of the water, Stola, and the land, Okasaha, the residents, Sarve, all, Nava, Nu, Vari, of the water, Nishevaya, by taking recourse, Abibhran, they took on, Ruchiram, attractive, Rupam, form, Yata, just as, Hari Nishevaya, by rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Jalastalaukasa sarve Navavari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya Jalastalaukasa sarve Navavari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya Jalastalaukasha Sarve Navavari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya.
Yatahari Nishevaya Jalastalakasa Sarve Navavari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya Jalastalakasa Sarve Hari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya. Ladies, Jalastalakasa Sarve Navavari Nishevaya Abibran Ruchiram Rupam Yatahari Nishevaya. Translation. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing. Just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Purport. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. We have practical experience of this with our students in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Before becoming students, they were dirty looking, although they had naturally beautiful personal features. But due to having no information of Krishna consciousness, they appeared very dirty and wretched. Since they have taken to Krishna consciousness, their health has improved, and by following the rules and regulations, they have increased their bodily luster. When they are dressed with saffron-colored cloth, with tilak on their foreheads and beads in their hands and on their necks, they look exactly as if they have come directly from Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now in Srila Prabhupada's Light of the Bhagavat, on this verse, the BBT has inserted this, what we just read, as the first paragraph of this purport. And then there's a second paragraph which he wrote back in 1961. So that says, the residents of the water are the fish, frogs, and so on. And the residents of the land are the cows, deer, and so on. By constantly drinking and taking bath in the fresh rainwater of the rainy season, the tired and parched animals are refreshed, and their complexions become brilliant as their health is invigorated by the arrival of new rainwater. The lakes, ponds, and rivers are cleansed and invigorated by the downpour of new rainwater and thus become most beautiful. Similarly, a devotee of the Supreme Lord who takes advantage of the beautiful and invigorating downpour of the transcendental descriptions of God found in Vedic literature finds his spiritual consciousness invigorated and refreshed. In this way, his spiritualized body becomes very beautiful. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Jala sthalaukasa sarve navavari nishevaya abhibran ruchiram rupam yata hari nishevaya. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing, just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Here in this one word is ruchiram. They become very attractive. Ruchi. I always remember in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, there are two mothers, Suniti and Suruchi. So the way I remember which one is which, is the king was attracted to the Ruchi, Suruchi. She was the attractive one, the younger one. And Suniti, Dhruva's mother, Niti means behavior. So she was the more well-behaved, you can say. She was the devotee, ultimately, who went back to Godhead with Dhruva. So Suniti and Suruchi. So here we have the creatures are dried up. Sometimes we see what happens to animals, creatures, and they dry up. You ever see a worm that tries to cross a sidewalk and doesn't quite make it? It gets dried up there. Sometimes I think that's like venturing too far away from Krishna consciousness. We risk going out into the desert of material existence. We may end up like that worm fried on the sidewalk. So here we have the solution. I love the way Prabhupada writes here in this Light of the Bhagavat sentence. A devotee of the Lord who takes advantage. First of all, this phrase, Prabhupada used this so often. Take advantage. Please take advantage. You must take advantage of everything that Krishna consciousness has to offer. A devotee of the Supreme Lord who takes advantage of the beautiful and invigorating downpour of the transcendental descriptions of God found in Vedic literature finds his spiritual consciousness invigorated and refreshed. In this way, his spiritualized body becomes very beautiful. So this is really the key. Of course, we're all beautiful originally. Beautiful and happy. This description of Prabhupada describes how before coming to Krishna consciousness, they were dirty and wretched. It seems that Prabhupada is talking about the hippies here, as he often did. Sometimes devotees have this romantic idea that Prabhupada liked hippies. Now, he did say they were our best customers. He did say that in one letter. But generally, when Prabhupada talked about hippies, they were the symbol of everything that was wrong in America. They were the symbol of Kali Yuga. They were frustrated and misdirected and lazy, and they gave up everything, but they couldn't give up sex, and they were dirty and so many things. They were symbols of many bad qualities that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. But of course they were inquisitive, and they had enough sense to come to Srila Prabhupada. They were attracted by Srila Prabhupada. But he didn't like their appearance. In fact, one thing that Prabhupada was very concerned about was that we were not lumped in with the hippies. He always wanted to keep that separation. He didn't want, because Krishna consciousness is respectable. It's the most respectable thing. So he wanted devotees not to look like hippies. And that was one reason why Prabhupada liked the shaved heads. You know that famous hippie seeds conversation. When Prabhupada saw that devotees were growing hair, he was disturbed about it. He said at least once a month. He gave the exact time, I forget. It's the Purnima after the Ekadashi on the dark fortnight, I think it is. Generally, Gaudiya Vaishnava's men shave their heads on that day. So he said at least once a month. Another time he said every fortnight, every 2 weeks. So he saw that as a sign of, it was hippie, because what is hippie means long hair. Lavanya Keshadharanam, that's one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada would point it out, this whole list of symptoms of Kali Yuga. So one of them is thinking you're very beautiful because of your long hair. So he didn't like that. He liked clean shaven, clean face, clean head, and effulgent, like he's saying here. Effulgent as if they came from Vaikuntha. Recently there's some discussion, one controversy, is ISKCON is full of them. Sometimes I think, any position you can have on anything, somebody else has an opposite position. It's just, we're in the age of quarrel, so I guess that's par for the course. But there's some discussion about, you know, the importance of dressing as devotees. I did some research on this some years ago. I was looking for it this morning. I couldn't find it. I had compiled some quotes of Prabhupada about dress. And Prabhupada said that he didn't insist on it from the beginning, but the devotees themselves wanted to dress like he was dressing. So he taught them how to dress like him, basically, in dhoti. Not exactly like him, but as brahmacharis. And when, you know, of course, when Kirtanananda went with Prabhupada to India, he didn't wear a dhoti, he wore a suit, a Western suit. So because Prabhupada would say, look like gentlemen. You should look like ladies and gentlemen. So the way American ladies and gentlemen dress, that's okay. So Prabhupada was actually all right with that. But there's no doubt that he liked to see devotees dressed in dhotis and appearing like devotees. And even, of course, there was a controversy at one time about dressing when devotees first started wearing non-devotee clothes. Of course, even this phrase is controversial, devotional clothing. People say, well, it's not devotional, it's just India. It's the way they dress in India. Why do you call it devotional? Well, in ISKCON, it is devotional. We've defined it that way. It's our devotional uniform, you can say. We've adapted it as our devotional uniform. So in that sense, it is devotional. Where it comes from is kind of irrelevant. But in ISKCON, it's our devotional clothing, Vaishnava attire, you say. So when devotees stopped wearing that to go out to preach, to distribute books especially, and Prabhupada heard about that. Now, what would happen sometimes with Prabhupada, he would hear from people who really didn't like something that was going on. And they'd give their own kind of spin on it. And sometimes Prabhupada would react to that. Then he'd hear later kind of a softer version of what was going on. So that happened with this. And Prabhupada heard, oh, they're distributing more books this way. Oh, that's not so bad. I said, I was afraid they were becoming hippies again. That was his concern. They wanted to dress like non-devotees again, becoming hippies again, just like the hair thing. So he approved of it. He approved of devotees dressing in Western clothes to spread Krishna consciousness. So he was, of course, Prabhupada was very liberal in spreading Krishna consciousness and what was required to spread Krishna consciousness. Because that was the most important thing. Really two things. Just like Lord Chaitanya said, janmasartaka kodi karapara upakara. So become yourself pure, and then spread Krishna consciousness to others. So both of these things, Prabhupada emphasized in so many ways. And of course, the spreading Krishna consciousness was also an important way to become pure. Besides this, we heard today, the downpour, invigorating downpour of transcendental descriptions of God. It makes our consciousness invigorated and refreshed. Papo tapa nekrinta nota nubritam govinda ganam ritaya. In the Goswami Ashtak, Srinivasa Acharya says, papo tapa, we're all suffering from sin. Why are we dirty and wretched? Because of papa, because of sin, because of our karma. Why are we unhappy? Because of our karma. Actually, that karma goes back anadi karma pali. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it has no beginning. So we have to be purified of that. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami he talks about this, because the first symptom of devotional service is klesha gni. Means klesha gni. Klesha, to destroy klesha. It destroys misery. Destroys our unhappiness. Makes us happy, in other words. The first symptom of devotional service. So in order to do that, then our sinful reactions have to be destroyed. The reactions to our sins and our ignorance, these things have to be destroyed. So how are they destroyed? They're destroyed by Vishnu Bhakti, by devotional service to Krishna, especially chanting the holy names. And his description of these sinful reactions, of course we have this verse from the Padma Purana, pralabdham palam papam kutam bijam palom mukam. So it says there are these different stages. Of course, this is described in the Nectar Devotion, the different stages of the sins. But one of them, it goes back. There's no beginning to it. We have karma that goes back. We have more karma than we can. We will live indefinitely in this material world with all the karma we have stored up, coming behind us, pushing us, you might say, pushing us forward in material existence. We have enough karma to keep us here for millions and billions and trillions and a Google of lifetimes. What is that? What's a Google? You ever heard that story? Some scientist, he wanted to name, I think it's 10 to the 100th power, something like that. So he was the one somehow deputed to give it a name. So he asked his little boy, what would you call it? He said, Google. So that's what it's called, a Google. So a Google of lifetimes in this material world we have coming to us if we don't destroy that karma. So obviously that's a source of unhappiness. That's covering us, keeping us bewildered in ignorance and committing the same sins. Rishabhdev says, I don't think this karma and vikarma is a very good thing. Because as soon as you do karma, fruitive activities, then you have to get another body. And with another body, you just stay entangled in this material world. You suffer again, over and over and over again. So we know that actually happiness is, that's who we are. We're meant to be happy. Sat-chit-ananda. That's part of our nature. But we have to uncover that. The whole second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes how to uncover that original nature. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, for example, by regular attendance in Bhagavatam or by serving the Bhagavat, then the modes of passion and ignorance become cleared away and we come to the platform of goodness. Srila Prabhupada often spoke about how we have to come to the platform of goodness. Goodness is where happiness is. If you read Bhagavad Gita, you'll see. Passion and ignorance, there's no happiness there. We think there is. That's our problem. We think that by doing things in this world, or not doing anything, we'll be happy. The mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. Always striving more and more to do this, do that. Passion is driving us, pushing us. Those are the urges, vegam. Pushing. So the mind is always agitated. But when it's afflicted by the disease of rajagun, tamagun. There cannot be happiness because there's no peace. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there can't be happiness if your mind isn't peaceful. So especially in passion, mind is not peaceful. It's always thinking the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. I just read, we get BTG, they send us a free copy of Hinduism Today. So when it comes, I kind of glance through it. And they had a quote in there by Jim Carrey. You may know he's a comedian. So he says, I think everybody should be very rich and famous. And then they would find out this is not the way to happiness. So he got a little realization at least. I don't know what he'll do with it, but he understands. And we, of course, we should see that, obviously. But that's what people are thinking. Oh, if I just had more money. Or if I had fame. People are attracted to fame. That would make me happy. But these things don't make you happy. Purity makes you happy. Krishna consciousness, purity, because the soul, the Brahminical platform. Prabhupada was training us to become Brahmanas, all of us. Sometimes we think in terms of Varnashram, we think, well, Vaishya, Shudra, Kshatriyas, what about those? But all have to have Brahminical qualities because we're meant to be Vaishnavas. We're meant to cultivate the qualities of Brahmanas. Satyam, Shocham, Kshama, Dhaya, as they're listed in Bhagavad Gita, cleanliness, honesty, truthfulness, adherence to religious principles, and so on. Or in the simple way Prabhupada said, we should be perfect ladies and gentlemen. So, clean inside and out, cleanliness. Even we find, it's like sometimes you're working and you, especially now, it's so hot and muggy if you work outside for a while. Oh, how doesn't it feel so nice to take a shower and get refreshed? So our minds, our consciousness, in Kali Yuga, it's like we can't avoid it. One of the problems of living in Kali Yuga is that, well, in any time, whatever impressions our senses take in, they make an imprint on our mind. So in Kali Yuga, we have so many bad impressions. It's one thing if you're living out in a farm somewhere and you see the cows every morning and the sun come up and they're beautiful. So that makes one kind of impression. But as you're driving along and you see billboards for sex and whatever, everything, buy this, buy that. So all of these things make an impression. These are called samskars. Just like we know of samskars, we try to make an impression by, when you get married, you have a fire sacrifice. That's so you know this is a big thing that you're doing here. Of course, ours is fairly small, but traditionally in India, it's a really big thing. Takes place over days. That's to make the impression that this is not a light thing you're doing here. So sometimes I would think, why this fire sacrifice? We're about chanting. It's like an initiation. Of course, the sacrifice itself has some potency. But part of the reason is to make an impression on our mind, samskar. So we have impressions of so many other things from so many lifetimes. And these impressions, of course, they combine together in different ways, and they come out in dreams. All these strange things that happen in dreams is a mixing up of these different impressions playing out in the subconscious, because they're all lying there dormant in the subconscious. Bija, it's like our desires. Sometimes we hear about our desires, getting rid of desires. We have desires we don't know about. We have an unlimited number of desires that haven't come. They're still on the subconscious level. Like I was saying, the results of our karma goes all the way back into the past. So lying in our subconscious, there's an infinite pool of desires. So how are we going to satisfy all those desires? And so many prayers we have, we say that Tulsi Devi, for example, she will fulfill our desires, or the spiritual master will fulfill all of our desires, or bhakti will fulfill all our desires. So that doesn't mean each of these particular little seeds of desire that we have lying dormant in our subconscious. But it means it'll satisfy our... We'll get rid of all those desires, is really what it means. Just like Dhruva Maharaj, Swamin Kritarto Smi Varam Nayache. He had big desires, really big desires. He wanted a kingdom greater than Brahma. And of course he got it. the pole star. I think of it now when I walk in the morning. The pole star. You know where how to locate the pole star? You take the two stars at the end of the Big Dipper. The Big Dipper are actually, those are the seven rishis, Sapta Rishi. Take the two stars at the end and you line them up and they point towards the pole star. So you can look at that and you can think, oh, that's Dhruva Maharaj's planet, the pole star. So he got that. That was his big desire. Of course, when he saw Lord Vishnu, he thought, well, I don't actually want anything. But Lord Vishnu says, no, I'm going to give it to you anyway. So all his desires get filled and fulfilled and more. He got the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he was lamenting, oh, I was kacham vichinvan api divyaratnam. I was looking for kacham. Kacham means like costume jewelry. That's what I was looking for, and Krishna gave me the most valuable jewel. Bhakti, devotional service, and his darshan. So that's the happiness. Tvachakshat karanalabdha vishudabdhi stitasyame. This is by Dhruva or Prahlad, I forget. He says, now that I've seen you, I'm swimming in an ocean of nectar. It's also said about the Goswamis, right? You're diving and surfacing in Gopi Bhava. And the gopis' love for Krishna and the happiness. There are a few places in that Goswami Ashtak, the word muda is there. Not mudha, but muda, M-U-D-A, without the H. Muda means happiness. So the Goswamis, by giving nectarian songs about Govinda, Govinda Ganamritai, they're making the living entities happy. Lokanam hitakat, that's all they want. They just want to deliver the living entities from material existence, from the devouring mouth of liberation, all these other desires. So we, of course, we got up, we live in this contaminated age, so it's very difficult. Rajagun, tamagun is everywhere, and we have to be careful. Especially we have to, if we work in this world, we have to go out and mix with people. We have to mix with the material energy. We have to work with the material energy. We have our occupations out there in this world. So we have to fortify ourselves. It's hard. Prabhupada wanted us to be engaged in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. So if we're at work, it may be a hard thing to do. That means, of course, that we have to be even more careful about preparing ourselves so we're ready to go out there and face that world and remember Krishna. I was thinking how we had some articles in BTG, devotees give some suggestions of what you might do if you're working out there in the world. You know, have Krishna on your computers, your screensaver, whatever, little things you can do. Try to remember Krishna. I was thinking just the other day, and of course in the advanced devotees, they have Ashtakalya Leela. So they think about what Krishna is doing during the eight times of the day. This is a meditation that advanced devotees do. But I was thinking that, well, this may not be for us neophytes, but we can think about what the deities are doing. If you look at your clock and you see, oh, it's 12:05. Oh, Radha Shyam Sundar are having aarti right now. So we can remind ourselves throughout the day about the deities. We know the deity's schedule, and we can, that's one way. Whenever we look at the clock, which we do so many times of the day, we can think about how Krishna is being served at this time. So whatever we can do to help ourselves, take advantage, as Srila Prabhupada, as I said, Srila Prabhupada would often say, take advantage. There's an expression called an embarrassment of riches. You've heard this. Usually it means people have so much wealth they don't know what to do with it. They just squander it or whatever. But we have an embarrassment of riches of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada has given us so much. It's like we don't know what to do with it all either. You look at your bookshelf and you see all these books. Oh my gosh, and devotees are writing more and nice books too, helpful books for us to advance in Krishna consciousness. We have so many ways. Sometimes I think we're hearing now about, of course, Ramiya Prabhu's class was about simple living. And I was thinking about former times when there was no iPod and electrical gadgetry and so on. And sometimes I think, gee, that probably would have been hard, because what would I do without my iPod to hear Krishna Katha. We can walk around anytime and we can always be hearing Krishna Katha because of electronics. I think maybe Krishna did that to help us in Kali Yuga. We can tune out the material world and tune in Krishna by His mercy. We're taking advantage of what the karmis have produced and using it in Krishna's service. So we have so many riches. We have such a wealth, such an abundance of facility for becoming Krishna conscious. And of course we need it because there's so much energy going against us. We need all these things to help us. And if we want to be happy, then we have to remember that's how we're going to be happy. Not becoming entangled in these things, not becoming pulled in to the modes of ignorance and passion that are all around us. We have to protect ourselves, make ourselves Krishna conscious, carry Krishna within our hearts. This is like Prabhupada, he came to America. He said, I was not alone, my spiritual master was with me. Krishna was with him. Those beautiful prayers that Prabhupada wrote, coming to America. Oh, Krishna was there guiding him. So the more Krishna conscious we become, when we have the time, we have to make sure we have time, that we make time for Krishna, for invigorating and refreshing our consciousness with transcendental descriptions of God found in the Vedic literature. We have to pour those on our wretched minds, Kali Yuga minds, so that we can be happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Prabhupada, this was some devotee recently, I was listening to a lecture, and the devotee was saying this was like a sutra of Prabhupada's. Because Prabhupada actually said it a lot. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So that pretty much says it all, doesn't it? If you chant Hare Krishna, you will be happy. If, of course, you chant according to the process, avoiding the 10 offenses, and our lives are meant to be built around chanting offenselessly and connecting and seeing Krishna in the holy name. So if we chant Hare Krishna, we will be happy and will be effulgent and pleasing to the spiritual master. So the verse again, Jalastalaukasa sarve navavadi nishevaya abibran ruchiram rupam yata hari nishevaya. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing. Just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. Any questions or comments? Madam Mohan Prabhu?
Wait, the unlimited stock of sinful or material desires that are in the subconscious. When you take initiation, it says you're free from your karma. So how do those two work together? How do you become free? Because you have something else to think about. You also have the instructions of the spiritual master, so you're not obligated to... In Kali Yuga, it says, what's that, 118.7, that you're not responsible unless you actually do it?
I actually don't know what that means, to tell you the truth. It's not that you just become free of all karma that you ever had. That's...
Well, in one sense, you become free, meaning that you're not forced to do it. If you didn't have another activity that's transcendental to please the spiritual master... you would be forced to perform those sinful activities. You didn't have a choice. You have to do that. So because you have something else to do and you're doing it, you're actually free from its influence, in fact, to bring it to the platform of action.
Now, one way to look at it, of course, is that, now as Srila Prabhupada said, that the Maya is generally in charge of the jivas, the bound-up jivas. But when one accepts a spiritual master and accepts his shelter, really actually surrenders to the spiritual master, which initiation is the formal signing of the contract, you might say, then Krishna takes charge directly. Krishna is directly in charge of the devotees who are under the guidance, under the protection of his representatives. Whereas those who are just under the three modes of material nature, then Maya, Krishna just deputes Maya, you take care of them. So that's one way to understand it. And in that sense, you don't have karma. But it's not as if your karma just stops. Otherwise, if you didn't have any karma, your body would just fall down dead. Your previous karma keeps your body going, for one thing. And of course, we don't experience that all our karma is gone. We still experience that we're in ignorance. We still experience desires and so on. So, I don't know, there's a more refined understanding of that. And maybe Mukunda Prabhu can help with it.
I just heard an analogy given by Bhanu Swami about how that's given by, I think Jiva Goswami has given it. He compared it to, like, if you put like a net or something like that, you know, in fire.
Oh, yeah,
it burns.
I heard that,
but,
too.
But it retains the shape of the net, but if you touch it, it automatically fall apart. But so it's kind of like that.
Right, it's like our karma is just sort of flimsy. Another example I heard is like a scorched newspaper. Something, you see, same idea. The newspaper, if you ever see that something or anything has been a fire, so it's sort of holding together and you can still read it, but as soon as you touch it, it just falls apart. So our karma is like that, more insubstantial when we accept the spiritual master.
Yeah, the Parabdha and Aparabdha karma, that you have to experience, as you were saying. What you've already done, that's in the body right now. And you'll have to taste the results of those things. At the time of Diksha, Kut and Bij are stopped, as long as the disciple does not regenerate them. So Divya Gyan and Kshiyate Papanasanam, which is the etymology for the word Diksha, the Kshiyate Papanasana means Kut and Bij are stopped. Mm. So the tendency to commit sin and the seed of sin, that could be stopped, but it requires Saranagati. So because Diksha really doesn't start until Saranagati. So the ceremony took place, but it's when you do Saranagati that the actuality starts to take place. At that time, Kut and Bij are stopped. But then you have Tate Nukampam. This verse is meant because you'll still have to taste some of what you have already done, but it'll be minimized from what I've understood. And I heard this example also about the net, that the form of the karmic pattern is there, but especially by Shravan and Kirtan, it demolishes that net.
Also, I was remembering Prabhupada, the simple analogy of the fan is unplugged. That was one. And then I was also thinking in, let's say you have somebody who has a bad streak in him. He hurts a lot of people, but then he joins the military. So they said, we have a place for you here where you can actually shoot people and it's good, as opposed to shooting people and it's bad. So there's the dovetailing process that you do have your particular propensities. But now that you're using it in the service of Krishna, just like what Arjun, he said, if you do it for Krishna's sake, you're not going to be affected by the reaction to it. So we're free from the reaction of our karma by sacrifice. Also, it's for his pleasure, but your propensity, which is how you were explaining how the body's built from these different reactions, and it that very same thing, if it's applied therapeutically, can cure the disease that caused it. The axe, the wood that cuts down the tree handle was made from the wood, from the tree itself. The axe
I was wondering if there were, what is the difference between our past karma as a non-devotee and a karma as a devotee, while you're a devotee, accumulating karma as a devotee?
What's the difference? Well, there's going to be some kind of a reaction for what we do as devotees. But again, it's up to Krishna how these things are, how they play out, what Krishna decides to do with us. Somehow or other. Now, one thing we have to always remember is that Krishna wants us back. We always have to understand that Krishna is very merciful, and he's going to do what we need. So his care is very personalized. So he's independent. He can do whatever he wants. He can adjust in whatever way that he wants. But what we should remember is we have to protect ourselves. We should be doing Krishna-conscious things. Otherwise, yeah, we can get reactions. Sometimes I think about, like, when you're driving a car. So if I'm doing something Krishna-conscious, then all those insects I'm killing while I'm driving end up on my windshield. Maybe I'll be protected from some reaction. But if I'm driving to go to the movies or something, maybe it's going to be a different result. We're killing all those insects. So that's, you know, this is a caution that we should be always be doing Krishna-conscious things, which Prabhupada told us repeatedly we should be doing. Of course, our occupations, those are Krishna-conscious if we connect them to Krishna. Whatever we do, it should have a connection to Krishna. Actually, we were talking about Sharanagati. Sometimes I think it's a bit of a paradox, I suppose you might say, that we know that we take initiation, that's the beginning. Initiation is called the beginning. But what does initiation mean? It means dasavat. Means one becomes the servant of the guru. So it's like full surrender, actually. As soon as you take a guru, in one sense, you're supposed to be surrendered. You're supposed to be fully surrendered to the spiritual master. The brahmachari in the ashram, he doesn't eat unless the spiritual master tells him to eat. So our whole lives are supposed to be guided. Guru mukha padma vakya chitte te karya aikya arana karya mani asha. I have no desire except what the spiritual master is saying and telling me to do, how to act. I was just hearing a lecture, probably, so it was clear. He was in Los Angeles, I think it was. And, of course, the preaching was going on vigorously. So Prabhupada, he said 3 or 4 times, this is your mission, to spread Krishna consciousness. This is your mission. So it was like he was telling us right there, this is our mission. There was nothing vague about it. This is our mission, to give Krishna consciousness to others. So there was a time when someone wrote to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I have trouble controlling my mind. And Prabhupada said, make sure that you're always thinking, what can I do to spread Krishna consciousness? If you're always thinking about that, then your mind will be controlled. So we have to protect ourselves in these ways, take advantage, again, of all the ways that Prabhupada has given us to help ourselves advance in Krishna consciousness. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.